Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the podcast. Today, I have a very good friend joining me, Jeff Sawyer. I have known Jeff personally, professionally now, probably 15 years, give or take. And back in the day, when we were slogging it in the business world, had a few opportunities to hang at a few off-site meetings, and afterwards, Jeff turned me on to some of the music that he was writing, composing, and playing. He's been a musician for, I guess, most of his life. Sounded like, you'll see in the podcast, he probably picked up an instrument and got busy playing when he was around 15. And for this podcast, actually, luckily, we got a chance to sit at his home studio up in Bucks County. It was awesome. And he set us all up, so I didn't even have to do the recording. He did all that work for me. Thank you, Jeff. So today, enjoy. You'll learn about his current project, which has been, I guess, about 8 years, give or take, maybe. Correct me in the podcast. I'm sure he will. His band is Run to Sandy. And check it out in the notes to link to their Facebook and or website. And check out their schedule. They're a great band, all original music, awesome musicians. They play locally in the Philadelphia area. And that's the focus of our conversation today, about the influence of music with Jeff and his family, especially his two boys. They're both playing now and quite proficient, it sounds. Looking forward to maybe catching them sometime in the future with their band and their project. So give it up for Jeff Sawyer and enjoy. Okay, here we are for this episode of the podcast, and with me is a very, very good friend, Jeff Sawyer, partner in crime somewhat in our day jobs. We'll leave that out. Who wants to know about that? Nobody.
Nobody.
But for a long time, Jeff and I have been talking on the music side of things, where kind of where this podcast is probably going to center on, with Jeff's background, doing that as a side thing he's been doing for longer than I've known him, of course. And last summer, actually, we were talking, and I said, hey, I'm trying to get this podcast off the ground. Jeff's got a band, heavily into the music scene. I think we could get together and do something. And now it's February.
That's right.
So here we are, and I'm in an undisclosed location somewhere in the countryside of Yardley, Pennsylvania. That's where we are. That's all I can say.
We're hiding.
So as I said before, you know, here I am in the studio, actually. Jeff's got this amazing studio, actually just finished building in his bunker here in Yardley. So I'm actually blown away. This is, and Jeff's actually nice enough to set up all the equipment for me today. I don't have to do anything, although I lugged my portable recording studio.
And you did bring some beer.
And I brought, and here's a shameless plug. Hope the guys at Tired Hands are listening, because we want to get those guys on someday. So we're drinking some beers, because it is Friday.
That's right. We won't say what time.
We won't say what time. Yeah, this is, luckily there's no time stamps on this. If there are, erase those. We might have an issue. Unless your wife comes home eventually and says, how many beers do you guys have?
None of your business.
None of your business, honey. Back off. So let me ask you, the one thing again, that you've been playing music, and this is about, get ready, this is all about you, man. You've been playing, as far as your musical career, this is what fascinated me, because you played some stuff for me when we first kind of got to know each other back through our work environment at a conference in New Jersey.
Yes.
And we're hanging out, and you said, hey, man, and we popped the tape in. And this is before iPhones. And you popped in a cassette, or made it might have been a disc, in your car. And said, this is something I recorded for my wife or something. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah. That I remember
that. Was at least
that.
10 years ago.
Yes.
So I know your music, you've been playing for, I guess, most of your life.
Yeah, so I started, as many bands did in our time, right, with my friends. And we all, you know, had tried our hands at different things, sports or whatever, right? And none of us really, you know, fit that mold. So I'll never forget this. I was down the shore, and I came home on vacation. And I grew up outside of Baltimore. And my one buddy called me. He's like, "Hey, man, over the summer I learned how to play guitar a little bit." I'm like, "Let me hear it." So over the phone, he started playing some stuff, and I was like, "I kind of always wanted to sing in a band. We should start a band." So we did.
Very typical.
Yeah, right. And being as again like many bands, who maybe initially weren't proficient musicians, we wrote stuff. We can't play their stuff. Let's try to write our own stuff too. And we did do a lot of covers, but we had another friend who was a drummer, right? And then another friend whose mom was kind enough to buy him a bass, and he became our bass player. And he's actually a phenomenal musician now. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that band? In fact, I just drove cross country with the guitar player.
Oh, that's your buddy.
That's my buddy. He just moved to California. What the hell was I going to say? When we started this thing, we all just kind of were like, let's do something after school and rehearse, and we started playing gigs and stuff. But all of us are still currently actively recording for the most part, playing shows. The one guy was in this band out of Baltimore called Roads to Space Travel. They just did this big reunion show. The other guy's in a cover band. The other two guys are recording, and we've played gigs together throughout the years. So it's something that's always been I was 15 when we started.
Right.
So
best age.
Most of my life,
And now, looking at, you said Baltimore, right?
Correct.
Because I know Maryland, but in general, there's, but I'm thinking of a locale because there was one of the Foo Fighters, not Docs, but whatever they were talking about.
Yeah.
They actually did a whole thing where they did a new song in every city.
Right.
And then, but part of that process talked about him going back to, was it D.C.?
So he grew up outside of D.C., yeah.
Right, but that whole area threw me off because of the hardcore scene or the punk scene, quote-unquote, from that same almost time where I was thinking of. I never thought of that.
Yeah, the whole Discord scene and, yeah.
But he was saying how influential, and I'm like, where?
Yeah.
D.C.? But it was a scene.
Yeah, no, it was totally a scene. I was never part of that. In Baltimore, when I was a kid, there were some hardcore bands, and there were some these other just like, Baltimore's kind of a weird little city. It's not like a Philly. It's not like a New York, obviously. It's a small town, really. And they call it Smaldemore because everybody knows each other there, right? And
I've heard of that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank well, you. Of course you wouldn't because you're not from there, right? But, they did a lot of, there were a lot of weird bands. Not weird in a bad way, but weird in a cool way.
Right.
There was a band at our high school called The Unknown who I don't think we ever played a show with them, but we all thought they were super cool because they recorded like a full-length album.
Wow.
And we were in high school. We're like, you can do that, right?
Yeah.
There was a band, Black Friday, who were pretty cool. And what was the other band? They're still around. Anyway, always like weird stuff, like guys in dresses playing drums standing up, right? It wasn't straight up
visual.
Right. And we were a bunch of prep school kids had short haircuts for the most part, the occasional slightly mullet-esque, speaking for myself.
I've got pictures. They're hidden.
You've been there?
They're buried. Yeah.
That's right. So.
I got picked. Trust me. People could blackmail me as much as they could blackmail you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what I guess my point I'm trying to make is there was always a music scene. Mm-hmm. And there generally is, if you look hard enough, most places, even Yardley, has a music scene, and always cool people who are just looking to, either listen or play or create or whatever. And for me, that's what it's all about. My wife always gets up my neck about it. I should play more covers, people would know you, come see you more. And I'm like, yeah, but, I'm not real good at covers. And they bore me, it's not what lights my spark. It's the creative side of it that I enjoy, the writing and recording.
Well, and we'll talk more about your current project you've been working on for quite a few years here and what led up to that. But this is not disparaging at all. I haven't heard some of the original side, but when the one guy I was on last, Steve Legato, a great guitar player, but he more recently was with a tribute band for Rush and hats off.
Wow.
Right. That's quite a tall order. And that's what caught my eye because he's getting more into just playing classical just for his own musings maybe and just to keep himself, because he's a photographer, does freelance, and I'm sure he's got a lot of time, not downtime. So, you know, it gives him a lot of time to practice. But I don't know. I should ask him and say, hey, what kind of originals? Because I think that's a way harder thing to do in a lot of ways, of course, is, and you said you're not good at covers, but to produce and create your own, write your own music. I mean, and it's something can stand on its own. I mean, people, I mean, whatever following you get, but at least it's yours. It's,
yeah,
so it's yours to take with you. It's organic.
You know, I'm not good with my hands. I can't build stuff, right? And my job is not something where I leave, you know, something behind physically, you know? We do leave nice things behind, and again, we're going to leave that on the table. We're not going to bring it on the table. And I do like what I do for a living, and I'm proud of what I do for a living, but, you know, this is what I do. This is what I make. This is what I leave behind, and whether you like it or not, you know, that's a different story, right? But, or whether someone else likes it or not.
Well, just think about that for a second. I mean, look at what is more, I mean, look, unless you're an architect or you're building cities or you're someone who...
Like Donald Trump.
Well, right. Please, don't even start.
Oh, I forgot that was on the do not talk list.
Oh, yeah, that was, hold on a second. Now you also...
That's a whole other podcast.
You're going to put a demerit in your column. But yeah, you know, so I always feel that to me, the things that mean a lot, I mean, you can take with them and they have meaning and impact for a long period of time. There's longevity to them. Look at music. That's a thing that kind of bums me out. My kids aren't listening to some of the things that I think they should at least have a foundation in.
Yes.
Because this is how it all started, and this is what got you to this point. My nephews, I just mentioned them, they're totally into all of the foundational music that we all knew growing up, and we know this is where it came from. But 30, 40 years later, 50 years later, you can listen to the Beatles, whoever, you can listen to Chuck, whatever band, and you can say and go, man, that's like time travel, because you've captured that, and you can take it with you forever. Anywhere you go, it's in your pocket for all intents. So when you're creating this, you know, maybe you're not building, you know, or cutting, chiseling marble. To me, though, I think it's a profound impact. A lot of people are desperate to be good at it, and most people aren't.
You know, I agree with you 100%. And it's funny because my kids are involved in music, as you know. We've talked about it offline here. And they're in a pretty intensive program. And a lot of the instructors and so forth, some play original music, some do not. And it always strikes me that the ones who do not are always...
Not original music.
Correct. Who play, like, you know, cover music and stuff.
I gotcha.
Who are, like, the most talented musicians. And they kind of say what you said, like... Wow, I can't believe, you know, like, I wish I could write music. I can't. Meanwhile, they could, like, you know, rip a solo to any song and cover it instantly, and it would sound better than the original, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I'm always envious of that because I don't have that, right? But to your point, you know, on a couple of things, with the creative side of it, you know, with my, I have, as I said, two boys, 17 and 14. They're both musicians. One plays bass, one plays guitar. And they both are in bands, and they're writing songs and creating. They're also playing some covers, you know. But what I really strove for with them musically, like as an education, and I looked at it as such, you have to like the Beach Boys. You have to like the Beatles.
Yes.
So they've both seen Paul McCartney more than once.
Wow.
They've both seen, well, I'm lying to you now. My youngest son did see the Pet Sounds tour with Brian Wilson.
Okay.
Because that's a must do.
He's coming back. He's coming to the parks.
Yeah, I'm going.
maybe I'll get tickets.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's a great show.
Cool.
You know, I made sure that they were into, you know, certain things, but then my older son is into like crazy indie rock I've never heard of.
Right.
My young son is getting into he's into the Misfits, he's 14, Misfits, Black Flag, Dead Kennedys, right?
That's me in the background clapping. Let's hear it for Jello Biafra.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, my point is that I kind of got them started, and I said, you know, all right, do what you, and I didn't say it, they just did it. Do what you want, be who you want to be. And that's, for me, the most important thing, you know, figure it out, find your trail. And hopefully they'll take away from it, you know, a little bit like I have in my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, one of my bands, I had my father singing backup with me. The latest release from my current band ends with my mother's voice telling us to save the pieces multiple times in a very eerie voice.
Yeah. Howard Stern-esque.
Yes.
Shut up, sit down.
Shut up, sit down.
But then again, like you did, like we just said, when you do this and it's indelible, it's something that it's a record. Granted, as long as we have power of some sorts, even, you know, buy some solar that you can hook your, you know what I mean? Like something portable.
Yeah.
So in case for some reason, someday you're like, how do I get my phone up and running again?
Yeah. The world ends.
You got, yeah, the world ends. At least I can listen to music with my solar array. But that's, again, that's a, you know, you're putting a stamp on something.
Sure.
And if it's only for your own amusement or it's for the greater good of, and you got 100 or 1,000, and some of these guys we talked about sitting down before, you talk about a U2. I mean, you know, no one has any delusions. I don't. I mean, but you make something, you leave something behind, and then you give this to your children. They can have that for the rest. Because you can play until you get really arthritic, I think. Like some of these guys, they don't play because they can't tour like this anymore. Everybody's quitting their tours now. Elton John, blah, 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 blah. I get it. But I guess it gets to a point where, you know, until that happens, these guys in their 70s.
Well,
they're playing music.
Yeah.
And playing it fairly freaking well.
Right.
And people
are
coming out in droves and selling out. So, I mean...
No, it's true.
It's a long curve.
It's true, man. It is a long curve. And it's not like you're out there, you know, playing rugby every weekend where you can't walk by the time you're 50.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, I really do look at it as like a guy who whittles away in his wood shop, you know. And I know a guy who makes, in fact, I have one in my office. It's a, he makes duck, you know, decoy ducks. He carves them. And they're beautiful. That's what he does. I look at it the same thing. I'm just whittling away in my little, you know, room, hidden man caves. My wife says, where have you been since we finished this room?
In all due respect, looking around, if there weren't, like, finished walls, I think it'd be pretty cave-like.
Oh, yeah. You should have seen it before the finished walls.
It's kind of cave-like.
Yeah, it's, you can't just, for the viewers out, the listeners out there, there are no windows.
There's no windows here at all. I might not leave.
It's 3 a.m, 3 p.m.
Who knows?
We don't know. Who cares?
That's a cool part, actually.
That's right.
We lose track of time. Oh, my God, what time has it got to leave? Oh, my God, it's 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Parents are calling because you see the kids practice up here. Parents are like, where's so-and-so?
Two Friday nights ago, I had a bunch of teenagers here, and they wrote and recorded a punk rock song at between 9:30 and midnight.
Oh, wow.
You know, and full blast, amps and drums, the whole thing. And it was awesome. And the parents were just like, all right, we'll get there when they're done, you know.
That's cool.
That's why I did this. You know, that's why I built this room. Well, it's not the only reason, but that's one of the reasons.
But you know something, and I've struggled with this a little bit because my son, I have a son and daughter, but anyway, my daughter is way more like me. My son's kind of more like my wife, but kind of in between. He's got some talent. I told him, man, we got to, you know, just keep noodling for now. Just have some fun, you know, but develop something where you can bring someone, you know, your friends in here without having, I know you said they play Xbox, whatever. And I just did, look, you got to find something. The younger you are, to at least latch onto something that you like to do.
Sure.
is super important. So this is a place where parents are like, man, I know they know you. They, I'm sure, trust you and your wife. And this is a place where their kids can come, do something positive. And they're not, if they spend 3 hours or 5 hours doing it, it wasn't 5 hours necessarily hitting the Xbox.
Yes, correct. It's absolutely the whole point of this. And so far, it's only been done for a month. So far, mm-hmm. we've had multiple situations or sessions like that with these kids and my own band. You know, it's great. It's great.
Now, let's do, the plugs here a little bit so we get them going. Run to Sandy is your current project. And how many years have you guys been together?
So I think we started, and my bass player, Dave, will kill me if I don't get it right. Cause Dave keeps track of
Dave's a historian.
Yeah, exactly. How many gigs we've played and so forth. And, I think we just played our last show. We played a local bar. It was like gig number 75. So we've been doing it for a while. You know, we don't play all the time. So I think 11, 12 years.
Wow.
First gig was in my backyard, you know, and we've played all over Philadelphia. We've played, mm-hmm. you know, events here locally, many bars and clubs, you know, all over the place. We've recorded we've recorded four, but we've only released three of them professionally, you know. Mm-hmm.
And I have your last one.
Yeah, Save the Pieces.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean.
Thank you.
And that's part of this whole thing, too, hopefully. I mean, I want this to be spotlight on someone like yourself who I respect and appreciate, and I'm glad I know you. I'm glad you took time doing this.
You.
But I would honestly, sincerely hope that somewhere along the line, we do things like this on the podcast, that somebody's gets the bug. They can link in and see what you're all about.
Yeah.
Catch a gig and see what's happening for Under Sandy. If they like it, then they're, you know, and then at least they get the exposure, and that's what I'm all about. So, I mean,
thank you.
So when's the next gig? Just kind of.
Yeah. So we're playing, I don't know when this will come out or whatever, but March, shoot, I think it's the 10th. We're playing in Jenkintown with some friends. We're playing a middle set with this band.
Okay.
Cover band, friends of ours called Hogan's Heroes.
Okay. Yeah. No, you've already put that out there.
Yeah, it's up on the interweb.
I'm going to get my wife on a date night.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your music, well, she digs.
You guys came to see us play.
We saw you at the Nail.
Gosh,
in Ardmore.
Yeah. That was a good time. That was a good show.
And Joe Murphy.
That's right.
Yeah, that place is kind of weird.
Yes.
Because you guys are great, but there was a group that we hung around for a while.
That's
you guys
right.
finished your set. The other group came on with these guys who were like, looked like Deadhead. You know, guys fell off the truck. You know, they're 65 years old. They couldn't play. I don't know what it was. It was a joke. It was some kind of avant-garde thing, but
yeah.
It was like, how do you guys play what you just played? And these guys show. So it's like an open mic kind of deal, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was.
Anybody could play.
I mean, I don't know who booked the show, but we didn't. I mean, I just booked us. And, you know, as you know, I have a lot of family out there in Delaware County, and they yep. all came out that night. It was great. That was a while ago. Jeez. But,
that's about 3 to 5 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah.
In that range.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I mean, when we play, it's great now because it's almost, not to sound stupid about it, but we've been doing it for so long mm-hmm. that we do fall into place pretty quickly. It's rare, and I better find some wood to knock on that we have. Yeah, there's a lot of wood in here.
Lots of wood.
That we have an off gig because mm-hmm. we just know the songs so well and stuff. And, you know, we have a super talented guitar player. His name's Richie Lather.
And you guys met, by the way, let's do just a
yeah,
step back
sure.
here. If I remember correctly, the story is, ultimately, these guys were back previous residents,
yep.
neighbors.
Correct.
Most of them.
So the original band was, the three original members are myself, mm-hmm. our drummer, Jonathan Millen. He's a dean at a local university.
No way.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Our bass player is... Dave Palmer. Dave is actually there's a construction project going on right out here on 95.
Uh-huh.
He's in charge of the Pennsylvania side of that.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, all of us were pretty accomplished in our careers, but had this desire. And so anyway, we started jamming, the three of us, and then we brought in a guy who played guitar with us. He's been in and out of the band a couple of times, Les. And then across the street from me was a woman named Jen who sang on our first two releases.
Her name's not Sandy?
No. Everyone, that's what everybody, as she's in.
I know.
And when she moved, it was a lot easier because nobody asked her. They moved to North Carolina,
oh,
so
okay.
she left the band. But, and then, you know, we've had a couple of lead guitars, a guy named Chris Cook, who's a talented guy, lives in New York now. He wrote a lot of the first two albums with us. And then our current guy, Richie's been with us for like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, maybe more now. And he's just a guy who's been playing professionally since he was like 13. And he's from Texas, so he's got this Fender twang in his style it's buttery and delicious. It's
yeah.
like a bagel. It's so good.
Little Austin City.
So the neighborhood is called Sandy Run 2.
Oh, okay.
Run 2 Sandy.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
See?
Not
this dispels
like
a lot of rumors.
Like Boys to Men.
Backstreet Boys.
Right.
No, no, no. So, yeah, I mean, so now we've had a few iterations, but in the current lineup, obviously you guys gel. You have, now how many originals do you have in your catalog? Just curious. You know, I don't want anybody to get mad at me if you get it wrong.
Well, I don't care. if they
Someone might.
We have close to, I mean, recorded somewhere in the neighborhood of like 20 to 25.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, you know. It's a couple of years between releases, which is one of the reasons I built this studio, was to hopefully help us create more.
Mm-hmm.
As we get older and our, you know, a couple of these guys are already empty nesters because they're old as shit. Am I allowed to curse on this?
You can. It's explicit. Trust me.
Okay.
Curse the
sweet.
All the fuck you want.
Excellent. There my kind go. Of podcast.
That's why we do it this way, man. Let it loose.
But, you know. They've got kids that are all in or out of college, right? And I'm not quite there yet soon. And, you know, so it's hard to find the time to do it regularly and to write songs. You know, often what we do is I'll have something or someone else will have an idea and we'll bring it. And as I like to say, we'll lather it up. Richie Lather, our guitar player, or mm-hmm. the other guys will do their thing. And then, you know, and it takes some time to kind of percolate and become what it's going to be. And I have demos of our last release. I have demos of almost all the songs that I did by myself. Not all of them, but a few of them. And they sound nothing like what the song eventually became,
right,
which is what's so cool about it, you know? Because those guys are talented in their own rights, and they bring their personal talents to the to my little whatever, you know? So it's great. It's a wonderful outlet. I'm very fortunate. You know, we talk about the band, you know, Run to Sandy as a thing, and we, you know, whether you like it or not, I'm not the best guitar player, I'm not the best singer, you know, and we're all, none of us are up for Grammys, but we protect it.
Yep.
You know, it's important to us, right? So it's become a neat thing, you know. Anyway.
So do you see, again, it made me think, because with your kids, I almost was going to ask you, as you maybe are noodling, writing something down, hey, man, I need this part. Can you come over? And do your kids ever jump in the process just to help, not you, but just to fill in a piece to kind of see how that sounds before it goes to the band? Would that be cool or not? Or I guess it would, right? They're not in the band. They're just got kids in the house that can play music. I would be like, hey, come on up here real quick. Play this bass line for me real quick.
Yeah, right. So I have a very talented bass player and a very talented guitar player living in my house, right? So it has happened. And I have a few songs. In fact, I just recorded one recently that a friend sent me some lyrics that he typed out on his iPhone, and I just, you know, threw a drum beat down on a, you know, like a programmed drum track, and
yep.
The kids play. I played a guitar part, and they did the other parts. And it's great. I mean, they're not all that interested in it, you know, because they've got their own things going on, which is great. My son Jake has played on stage with us multiple times.
Very cool.
He sat in, and here in Yardley, they have this big Music on Main festival, and we played it a few years. Excuse me, and he sat in on a guitar.
I've seen your posts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah,
was your dad in one of those?
My father sang with us.
He sang?
Yep, that's right.
See?
Yep.
I got a memory like an elephant.
You do, my goodness.
Not a stalker. Tell everybody that, because I just remember this crazy stuff, because it's cool, man.
Sure.
It hits home.
Yeah.
To do stuff like that with your kids.
You know, it's what it's all about. And for me to do that with it was my father, my son, and I, and Run to Sandy on the
three
stage.
Three generations.
I mean, come on. Like, what? You know, give me a break, right? So
now, does your wife have any musical talent? Don't think this through first.
Should we hit the pause button?
Yes, hold on a second. Now, does she have anything that she can lend, or she?
She
does
so
she get she, involved in some way besides helping out moving kids from A to B with equipment?
Musically, no.
Okay, musically, no. Okay,
even though literally three feet from my left elbow right now is a trumpet. That it's in the closet.
Okay, I was gonna say, I'm looking
where it'll likely remain.
Okay,
she was a trumpet player back in the day, and like first, as she likes to say, first chair.
Like band. Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
In like middle school and stuff like that.
I play trumpet.
Yeah, yeah, not an easy instrument.
Not at all.
You know, she refuses to, just like she refuses to ski. She refuses
what?
To.
I know. It's like my wife. My wife just
maybe they should go on vacation together.
Absolutely. They'll go down south. They'll hit a Caribbean island somewhere. Yeah,
send us pictures while we're skiing. Right.
That'd be
so,
awesome.
So no, but she does have. When it's a funny story. We met through music.
Okay.
I was recording a song in college for. Like the school put some money together, and a friend was producing a CD of original music.
Nice.
And I recorded a song, which we actually re-recorded on the first Run to Sandy release, called Emil. And she was involved with helping produce, and because she had actually, her father had, my father-in-law had worked in a recording studio in Philly. I always forget which one. I think it was Alpha. Or it was either Alpha and Sigma, whatever the smaller one was. He worked in there for a bit.
Okay.
And which are... you know, famous studios. Like he tells me stories of the Stones recording in there and stuff. And
yeah, people don't realize that.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
Philly's got a lot of history.
Bowie, Young Americans. Yep. I mean, all that stuff, right?
Yep.
So she did an internship there, and she kind of helped at the school, and that's how we met, and we started dating when we were recording that. You know, putting this whole project together. But it's funny because you know it's not. You know, she's not impressed by what I do musically. You know, she just abides it. You know,
is she not impressed because it's obviously she's intimately connected to you, or she's not impressed because she's seen somebody in the studio maybe, or she had connections to like musicians that are playing to 50,000 people? I mean,
maybe Yeah, I don't know.
I hope,
Chuck, that it,
I think that's what that's it gotta is. Be it, because she's looking at you like, all right, you're pretty damn good, but I've seen this, you know, for example, she saw the Stones or something in the studio. You're like, what? I'm just saying, using that caliber, I get that, but.
Well, you know, she also has to listen to me snore every night, so there's that, right?
And now you created this whole environment where you've got two other men in the house, one playing drums in particular, playing bass. Those are pretty loud instruments.
Yes, yes.
So you've got this thing going up here in the cave, and she's probably downstairs trying to watch Real Housewives or wherever.
Yes.
And she's like, fuck.
Well, you know, maybe. And yes, to the Real Housewives part. Listen, I'm very fortunate. She's cool.
Yeah. I've met your wife.
She fully supports the kids musically, me musically. She lets us do our thing. You know, she's never stood in the way of that, which is, you know, why you're sitting in this ridiculous man cave right now.
But it works. Because, you know, honestly, this is dead space up here for all intents and purposes. Yeah. It becomes either a den or a study or whatever you want to call it, or it becomes storage.
Right.
So what else would you do? Honestly, looking, people don't understand. If you see this, this is literally at the very top of this house, basically the third floor.
Yeah.
And, I mean, looking at it, this is the perfect spot for something like this.
If you look behind you, there's a stamp on the wall. It says 1836.
So, oh, my God. There it is. Yep.
So this part of the house was built in 1836, which, you know.
It is literally carved in. Looks like a nail on the wet, on the, whatever you want to call it, the stucco. Whatever, that is not even stucco, whatever that is. Wet cement.
Yeah, whatever.
What's the D&E stand for, you think?
So it was the people who built the addition in 1836. So the original house, as I told you earlier, was 1790, right? And so what I think is super, super cool is we're sitting in a room that was built in 1836, finished in 2018, playing rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I would think that the dudes who built this place who never lived during rock and roll, obviously, were, you know, dead probably 100 years before rock and roll was born,
yeah,
would come back and be like, this is fucking cool. You know what I mean?
Well, you could start a record label called D&E Records.
That's a good idea.
I mean, I guess the D&E is maybe an initial.
Yes, yes.
First and last name or husband and wife?
I think it might be husband and wife.
Okay.
Because there's a few of those types of things around the house.
That is super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Trademark that.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. D&E 1836 Records. There you go. Should we rewind?
No, man.
Is it out there?
Because it's here.
That's right.
It's proprietary.
That's right.
No one even knows what it looks like.
We'll say LLC, comma LLC.
Amen. Yeah. TM.
I like that.
D&E 1836 Records. Okay. So like we were saying, I mean, so your wife, not as much musically talented per se, but you guys met through music. She appreciates and she supports. Not to get off on a tangent, is there anything else besides trumpet? And I know she doesn't ski. Any other talents? Because I don't. Does she possess any talent? You're like, yeah, she's amazingly amazing potter. Go in the basement. There's her potter, her wheel.
She's not a potter.
Okay.
She is a, she's a Kundalini yoga instructor.
That's impressive.
Took a year for her to become that.
That's a lot of work. Kundalini, that's spiritual.
Right. Exactly. It's deep. It's deep.
Do you do it?
No, I don't quite understand deep. I'm very shallow.
You might have to broaden your horizons just a tad.
That's right.
Because I've heard spiritual experiences come out of Kundalini, but I've never done it.
Yes.
I know of it.
I've heard the same. And it was a life-changing experience for her, for sure.
Why did she do it? Tangent for a second, everybody.
Yeah.
We're going, just curious, what made her...
You know, we're all looking to fill that God-shaped hole, right? So,
yep.
I think that was part of her journey, right? And,
cool.
You know, yeah.
Now she's obviously certified. Does she teach?
She does occasionally.
Okay.
You know, it was more about, I think, the experience of the journey,
okay,
than the end result, right?
So, where do you? There's, a program nearby at a school, or
yeah.
How does one go about?
Good question. So she works at a place here in Yardley.
Okay.
Which I'll plug.
Please.
It's called the Khalsa Healing Arts Center. In fact, I was there this morning getting adjusted.
Say it one more time.
Khalsa Healing,
Khalsa?
Healing Arts.
Spell that.
K-H-A-L-S-A.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And it's run by a husband and wife who are two of the greatest people that I know.
What are their backgrounds?
So they are, you know, the Kundalini yoga is very meditative.
Yes.
So they do a lot of meditation and yoga. They also, they're Sikh. They follow the Sikh religion.
Oh, really?
Which I don't know a lot about. But they're vegetarians, they're vegans, and
full vegan,
full on.
That's hardcore.
We were talking this morning. He told me I need to reduce my sugar, and he's right.
He's 100% right.
Yep.
We'll talk off mic afterwards. Good. I'll tell you something I've been doing.
All right. Yeah, I need that.
You gotta stop the sugar is the white devil. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah.
Listen to what he says.
So anyway, they have this. It's a yoga, meditation, chiropractic office, massage, all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And so they teach this, and they're actually pretty renowned for the course.
Really?
And yeah, and my wife just happens to work there, and you know, works the front desk, right? And she, after a few years of being there, had seen a few classes go through and said, you know what, I think I want to give it a shot.
Wow.
And it was crazy. I mean, she would like wake up at on a, you know, she'd go there on a Friday night, and I wouldn't see her till basically Monday afternoon. I mean, it's for a year, like once a month.
You know, oh, okay.
Not every weekend.
Okay, it's gonna sound like an executive MBA program.
Yeah, yeah, it kind
of. You know.
Yeah.
Because that's the same kind of program.
Except you don't make any money on the back end.
But you feel very enlightened.
That's right.
And you're inner peace,
which is more important.
Inner peace.
That's right. That's right. So
a year of that.
Yeah, she did a year of that, and. You know, and that was pretty much it. And she's taught a few classes here and there and, you know, made some really good, deep relationships. Some super nice people she went through with that I've met.
Very nice.
In fact, I've played, the Khalsas have this awesome Memorial Day vegan potluck picnic every year.
Is it good?
It is, dude.
I'd be willing to bet it is.
It is so good.
See? We can be vegan if someone else prepares the meals.
That's the problem.
It's a lot of work.
I can barely cook non-vegan food. Right?
Yeah. Patty, skillet.
Yeah. I mean, dude, when I tell you know, lasagna that tastes like it's out of South Philadelphia, except it's vegan.
That always blows me away.
Right.
Because you got to get your proteins in there. And
yeah.
The proteins are plant-based.
Right.
And that's anything that's meatless, unless it's tofu. Blah. Right. But I mean, there's other ways of doing that now.
There's a lot of ways of doing
quinoa it. Quinoa and all these other grains that aramanth. And, you know, listen, you got to be very creative. You got to do a lot of work.
Right.
Got to be prepared to buy a lot of ingredients, have them on hand, and
yes.
Understand how they go together.
It's a commitment.
It's a freaking, and it's a lot. A bunch, I think, like those people, they're both together, husband and wife doing it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if your wife does this and you don't, it's going to cause, because I've told my wife this a few times, I want to try to do some things. She just rolls her eyes and she's like, she does more cooking at night than I do. I'm like, okay, I get it.
In other words, you said, I want you to do these things.
No, well, I think it would benefit both of us.
Of course.
And sometimes that comes off as you know, the other half looks at it as you're pointing fingers.
Right.
I'm like, no, I'm not. I think, as I mentioned, this whole thing with sugar, they're absolutely right. I have so much research I've been listening to.
Yeah.
So she got involved as obviously as being employed and then knowing and she went through it, and whether she's going to monetize this herself someday or not, it's up to her.
Probably not.
Okay. That's cool. I mean, that's good to have it.
But that's cool. Exactly. You know, it's all about the journey, right?
And, sure.
You know, this, like we were talking about the music thing, that's part of my journey. That's her journey, I guess. Right. So. It's good.
But you know something she should, I'm not, you know, pontificating, but I'll just, from what I've learned about kids in this world today, with everything in the way social media and a lot of things that, you know, causes attention deficit that they deal with and anxiety. I've got a friend of mine right now, a couple friends actually, who've got children same age as yours and mine, are having anxiety issues at a very young age. I'm like, I mean, profound. And you kind of scratch your head and go, where's this coming from? And you kind of realize you draw some parallels. But with her, maybe Kundalini or meditation, teaching kids today for the coping mechanisms on how to center themselves without alcohol or drugs. Alcohol's fine. I mean, enjoy it. I mean, but not making that the crutch.
Everything in moderation, right?
Everything in moderation. So, I mean, this can be something that foundation helps everybody.
It's a really good point. You know, like this, there was, I hate to bring up this, but that school shooting the other day.
Well, it's timely.
It is timely. And, you know, I'm a huge proponent of gun control, particularly
control.
Yeah,
right.
I don't think we need to ban guns, but I think certain people shouldn't have them, and certain kinds of guns shouldn't be available. And it's just you know what the fuck, right? But you know, we talked about it the other night at dinner, and my younger son, who's 14, he's in eighth grade, said, you know, he said it three times. It's really scary. It's really scary. So you couple that environment that they're living in, and we kind of paralleled that to us, you know, in our 40s, growing up during the Cold War. And my other son was like, wow, that must have been really scary. I go, not as fucking scary as having somebody come into your school and shoot you. Because, you know, we hid under a desk and you weren't going to get blown up. Like, it was not there. It was far, far away.
Yep.
Right? It wasn't an ever-present. So we talked about that. And so you couple that, like you were saying, with the social media and the phones and the constant connectivity, but not being ever connected.
Correct.
You know? So this is what I hope music brings to my children. And we actually, so to your point, my older son and I did do a meditation course there one time.
Cool.
And yeah, I think he was a little too young for it, and I was a little too me for it, but, you know.
See, self-actualization, man. You know who you are. That's right. And some things don't, you know, not everything works for everybody.
I think it's great. I think it's
cool.
For
everybody else.
That's right.
But you know something, you know, you're right about growing up when we did, you know, it was so far removed. And that's the same thing with anything we look at in our society. We look at things that are happening in these wars, quote unquote, wars on terror, and they're out in Afghanistan. And they're not, you know, they affect our servicemen and women, but us personally, they're not affecting us directly in front of our faces until, I mean, statistically, it's still incredibly low that anybody, hopefully, we know personally, would be affected by terrorism. But I grew up with a guy, I went to high school with him. He was a few years younger. Lived a block over, and he was in the World Trade Center and died. I went to the memorial a few years ago and found his name. So I haven't seen him in years, but technically I know somebody who was impacted by an act of terrorism, I guess you could say. I don't want that. It's not something I'm proud of to say that, but you know, it's one guy came online yesterday, put a post on, and my wife sent it. I mean, she doesn't do any stuff like this. She's very rare. But it was, I listened to this guy and he made a point. Kids today should not be afraid. They feel like almost, oh, we're not going to rock the boat. Don't want to say anything about so-and-so. And you know what? We got to have a voice. Kids have to have a voice and feel comfortable in saying, so-and-so's acting weird. So-and-so's doing some really strange things
right
over here. You know what I mean? You don't like me, so what? You don't like me. I'm just telling what I see.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to dive right back into my little, like you said, into this world of the social media where I don't have to interact directly with somebody or eye to eye with them.
Right.
And that's kind of a little because you heard all those kids come out of that school saying, well, we kind of thought this was going to happen. Or we kind of, if anybody was just going to
he was the fucking guy.
This guy, we all thought was a mental case. And again, not diagnosing his problem as far as how he got to this point. There's a lot of reasons behind that alone, but other kids noticed it. And then it's just one of these things that kind of,
you know,
how does it slip under the radar when it was kind of staring them in the face to some degree?
Right.
And anyway, so that's takeaway.
No, it's a good point. You know, I mean, what I've been seeing a lot on social media since that thing, and I've seen, like, you know, there's a big joke that every time one of these things occurs, everybody gets up in arms and everybody posts on Facebook and everybody forgets about it. And then it happens again and the cycle continues. You know, thought about it was,
you're welcome.
And a friend of mine actually posts this all the time. He goes, you know, gun control is important, but so is, you know, mental health.
Absolutely.
And so this kid who did this shooting, you know, both of his parents had recently died. Both of his adoptive parents had died in the past year. Ooh. He was living with a family who, you know, just ended up with because he had nowhere else to go. And he probably had issues to begin with, you know, and this is where it ended. I'm not excusing his behavior, of course, but, you know, the point is we could have probably done something to fix that, to head it off. But, you know, mental health issues are not, we don't talk about it, you know, we don't. It's not like, oh, I broke my leg or I blew out my ACL. You know, I'm crazy. You know, like, oh, you're crazy. Ooh, stay away from that guy. I mean, like, you know, there's things you can do to fix the crazy. You know what I mean?
But I'm sure going back, looking back, I had family in the war, and actually an uncle just turned 93 this year. He was in the Battle of the Bulge.
Wow.
World War II. He was a tank gunner. He was in a tank shooting at.
He was a badass.
I guess so, but you would never know it. I think after that, if he was a badass at that moment, his life went a whole other direction. A very down-to-earth, very
good,
mellow, unassuming in the sense of just not an ostentatious type of guy, just not reserved either, just a gentle guy. Gentle soul as an uncle. Great guy, in my opinion. But my point is, he came out of that, thank God, without now we got PTSD issues. But they, but a lot of those guys came back and they were damaged after World War II, or after Korea, after Vietnam, so forth and so on, and it was ignored.
Right.
Just suck it up and deal with it. You're a man.
That's right.
Now,
stiff,
you know,
upper lip.
They see PTSD as a real, because you know, how many servicemen and women are committing suicide, and that's a big issue. There's other factors behind this that are starting to find, even biologically, there's some changes in hormone levels and so forth. But the fact you recognize that, the fact the military is recognizing that, if they're paying for that right. through the VA, thank God, because you know, look what we're doing to these poor guys. The stuff they see is so horrific. It's beyond mention. Some guys get over it. Some men and women get over it. Most don't, I don't think. I don't think you ever recover from that mentally.
How can you?
Never.
You know, and
all day long, you're out there.
Right. Well, no, I mean, you're right. And like, I think of it this way. I say, you know, okay, you know, you've got these experiences and so on and so forth, and we're starting to recognize it as an issue in the military, for example. But those are baby steps. We have a long way to go. And I, you know, I'm very much a Neanderthal when it comes to understanding this kind of stuff, and I will wholeheartedly admit it, right? But I think we need to, as a nation and as a society, need to understand that that's a big problem. And, you know, back to the gun issue, like, that dude in Florida, that guy in Vegas at the country, I mean, he owned like more guns than, you know, a small military base. Like, why is that okay? How is that all right? And if you look at Australia, what they did, and everybody's, you know, whoever's listening to this, if you're a little more conservative than me, which is not hard to be, you're probably thinking, Australia, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? Dude, look at the stats. You know, we've had 18 school
some form of school shooting
in 2 months.
Whether it was suicide or violence towards others.
In 6 weeks.
People dispute this. Oh, it's not 18. I go, well, no, I think it's all incidents involving a gun.
At a school.
At a school. There's 18 incidents in the United States
In the last 6 weeks of 2018.
I mean, beyond fucked up.
Right.
That statistic should not be normal.
There's not that many in Australia, I think, as a whole. Since like 1996, when they decided we're not going to be like America, we're going to put an end to this problem before it becomes a bigger problem, which we haven't been brave enough to do here.
I mean, look at gay marriage just for a second. For, you know, years, everybody, even left, right, center, everybody was up in arms. Now, you know, more people come around. And it was then, you know, civil unions. And now pretty much the majority of Americans are like, okay, fine. It didn't destroy the country. It didn't destroy social safety nets such as Social Security, Medicare. It's, you know,
Christianity did not implode.
Right. You know, Satan didn't pop up suddenly and start nuking people. I mean, we're okay. We survived. You know, and it's the same thing about guns, because look at Gabby Giffords. I mean, she got shot. Her husband, Mark Kelly, who's a decorated astronaut, and they're all in the guns. I mean, in the sense that they are pro-gun.
Right.
And they're saying, look, we just want more sound regulation.
Right.
I shot a handgun for the first time last summer down in Ocean City, Outer Banks.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rainy day, nothing going on. I had teenage boys. Like, one kid was on with us from up the street. I'm like, is it okay he shoots a gun? Parents are like, no problem. Just brought him in, got everything. We got a Glock out, you know, boom, boom, boom. And super careful. I explained to them how important this was of being careful, because on a Glock, there was no safety. I'm like, that scared the shit out of me, even though it was a shooting range. But the point is, it's a semi-automatic handgun. And I looked at it, and I go, that's super powerful, and it is exhilarating. I didn't go out and buy a gun the next day.
Right.
I wasn't suddenly like gun crazed. Neither of the kids, they were scared shitless.
I bet.
They got done with that and realized, oh, my God, like, this is real. This isn't like on an Xbox or something. And that's what we're telling you. When we talk about those semi-automatic rifles, now he had one of them, I think, yesterday, this recent shooting. The point is, who needs a weapon? Like you said, who really needs?
Nobody.
I don't believe any civilian needs a military-grade weapon of any kind. And the idea you're protecting yourself against the government's not true. Who you're protecting yourself against ultimately is if the whole thing implodes, is possibly you might have to protect your property against people. But at that point, I think all is lost. I don't know if a gun's going to help you.
You know, the bottom.
My opinion.
No, that's a good opinion, and I respect that. I mean, I think, for me, it's very simple. And, you know, I look at these kids, right, and I look at the gun owners and the Second Amendment and, you know, your right to bear arms. I don't think you don't have a right to bear arms, but I think that right should never supersede the right for children to be safe and to feel safe.
Yep.
For my 14-year-old to say to me, you know, Dad, it's really scary. And he said those words to me, like, it affects him. You know, like he could visualize. I mean, they have active shooter drills at their school. Like,
same. Yep. I mean, same with us.
What the fuck, right? You know, that's where we are now as a country. That's okay. It doesn't do anything. People still die. Mm-hmm. It's bullshit.
Well, it's mental health, 100%. On most of these cases, I told my kids last night because my son was talking about guns, something with my daughter. They just fight over stupid stuff. So I'm like, and I try to explain his logic. Sometimes it's flawed. The reason being, let's go back this up with, again, facts, not alternate facts, but facts. Sometimes he has fantastical thinking. That's a boy at this age. He's 14 as well, you know, like your youngest. So anyway, I said to him, I said, it's about, you know, it's not about the guns per se. They do the killing, but I said it's about how to, you know, in their schools and deal with, you know, mental health or dealing with identifying some of these things. But he was saying about, I'm losing my train of thought. It's going to come back to me in a second. But I guess the point is, you know, we do have to look at guns differently.
Yeah.
And he was about taking guns away. I'm like, no one's taking anybody's guns away in this country anytime soon.
No.
Don't be
that,
fooled.
That ain't going to happen.
You know what I mean? So it's about, again, it all comes back down to mental health. I said, anybody commit an act like this, I don't care what age, what stage, or who they are.
Right.
A, unfortunately, it's mostly males, if not all. There's an issue we have to identify. And the second part is they're sick.
Right.
These are sick, sick, sick individuals. I don't care where they came from,
right,
what walk of life. Anybody to do this is very ill. And that's what I said to him. I said, and so back to your point, ultimately, is that, you know, we can't be cutting budgets, unfortunately, towards mental health. We should be pouring more money. Instead of all right, last on this, I swear to God, we're going to go down a rabbit hole here. $1 trillion for defense spending. It's never going to happen, but that's a budget out from the White House. How about we just took, I don't know, a couple billion and pumped it into mental health?
Sure. Right.
At all levels.
It's a great idea.
You know, instead of building a wall to keep people out, which isn't going to do much for anything. People, I know, a woman works for me. She's, you know, Hispanic. She's from Mexico. She's Mexican descent. She laughed. She said, all the people she knows, they're still in Mexico. If they really want to come to the U.S. But more people, less people are coming to the U.S. on that side because the Mexican economy is getting better.
More people are leaving the U.S. from Mexico than entering the U.S. from Mexico.
Well, let me ask a question on that one. You said that because that just came up on, I just listened to the same thing from somewhere else. Is it Mexicans leaving to go back to Mexico, or are there people expats going to set up shop and live in Mexico?
Who knows? Yeah, that's a good question.
Anyway, so... but then we got down this rabbit hole because of this recent shooting, and it sucks. Back to mental health. But let's talk about, let's go back full circle. I mean, Christ. talk about music for a second.
Yeah, let's do that.
So your top, give me your top, and it's hard for me to do the
I'm
same thing.
I'm not good at top lists, but go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, no tops. Let's just don't even do that. Just if you were to say growing up.
Yeah.
Now, you said Beach Boys.
Yeah.
And you said Beatles. I
sure.
know that. I just looked in the one room downstairs with a bunch of old guitars. I won't say old guitars you'd kind of put down there instead of up here.
It's the B Squad.
It's the B Squad guitar rack, and there's a print of the Beatles.
Yes.
And I think I've been to your office, and in your office it might be a Beatles.
That's correct.
Okay. See, good memory.
Yes.
So I take it the Beatles.
Absolutely.
Or McCartney, obviously.
The Beatles.
The Beatles, ultimately. The Beach Boys. Give me one more band. One more band you'd say, if I had to pick one band from your formative years.
Yeah, okay, my formative years. Yeah. That's easy. So, you know, I went when I was, again, I grew up in Baltimore. And when I was 15, I came to Philly to the old JFK to see U2 on the Joshua Tree tour. When Bruce Springsteen came out on stage. And it's hysterical because friends I've made later in life who grew up in this area, in Philadelphia area.
They remember that?
They were there.
Oh.
And I was there with my family, and it was a life-changing experience. It was my first concert I ever attended.
Really?
It was, okay. Yeah. And I walked out of there, I'm like, I want to do that. Like, that looks really cool, you know? And that so U2 for me, and that album in particular, was a huge milestone in my life, and all my friends still make fun of me about it.
Why?
Because I, you know.
Did you go full U2?
Let's just put it to you
this
way.
Did you mow it out?
No, well, I had a mullet. It was not quite, you know, that.
It wasn't Bono's mullet.
It wasn't Bono's. But my first gig I ever played, I was wearing suede cowboy boots and a suede vest over a black T-shirt.
That's very Joshua-esque.
Yeah, it was definitely a again prep school Baltimore ripoff of YouTube.
A cheap imitation, but
yes. But you know, the thing that I took away from you know, you have the songwriting craftsmanship of Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, right? Yep. And then the amazing recordings and stuff that they did. Same with the Beatles, of course. I mean, just, you know, if you look back on their catalog and then you say, wow, that was like 9 years of that was it. It was like 9 years.
Did they record studio albums over 9 years?
Basically, you know, from their when they hit America,
yeah,
in 64, was it?
Yeah, I
was not yet born. But to 69 when they broke up and all of the, you know, Rubber Soul, right? All the way to the White Album and Let It Be and everything in between. Revolver. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
that's a lot of material.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a freaking ton.
A ton of material in a short amount of time, and not only a ton of material, but the expanse of the breadth of the work,
right,
is
how it evolved, yeah, so quickly.
Right, right, precisely. So, you know, that workmanship side of it. So you have the craft side of it, the workmanship side of it of the Beatles, you know, and then the really truly like spiritual side of the U2.
Yeah,
those are the things that I've always taken away from music, you know, that writing music and being a musician. Those are the things that have always influenced me the most. But you know, I went through like a, you know, all my friends were listening to like The Cult and you know, we were all into REM, of course, you know, back in the day, but
of course,
you know, heavier stuff. And I kind of like started listening to like, well, you ever heard of this band, the Waterboys, you know, out of Ireland? Or, you know, hey, I got
Water
this.
Waterboys are very good.
I got this old 1940s vinyl of Woody Guthrie playing Dust Bowl ballads. You know, and I went backwards, yeah, through like all that stuff to find what really that's what sparked my interest early on, right? And the ability to make an impact on someone musically, right? Whatever that way may be. You know, some people hear a guitar solo and it blows their mind. Some people hear, mm-hmm, some lyrics and it blows their mind. Whatever, that's cool, no matter what you do, right? So rock and roll is an amazing medium,
yeah,
you know, and many people have done many amazing things with it, you know? So long answer, short question.
But no, and I'm big on U2. I'm a little bit older, so when U2 hit with War, that's the one that broke for me.
Yeah.
And I was on my way to go. I lived in Long Island at the time, so I'm on my way on a road called 347, that's the Smithtown Bypass, blah, blah, blah. And my mom's driving me. It's one of these roads. It's a two-lane highway each way, but it has stop lights and left turns, which...
Are you going to the Nassau Coliseum?
No, I'm going the other direction. I'm going to Stony Brook University. So U2 is playing. I had tickets. It was general admission on the floor.
Wow.
At a college.
The War Tour.
The War Tour.
Wow. Which is the one they recorded the Under Blood Red Sky on that tour.
Correct.
Okay.
So I'm in the car. Someone left turns us. We have an accident.
Oh, no.
And no seatbelts. Really stupid. No airbags, of course. So I wasn't totally messed up, but enough where I might have a concussion. They're like, we're taking you to the hospital. I hand my ticket to my two buddies who were fine. They're in the back seat. His mom came, so they scalped the ticket, and those two went to the show.
Wow.
I never saw them. But I did get to see them on the Unforgettable Fire, front row, Radio City Music Hall.
Really?
And I'm looking, I'm like, damn, Bono's short. You don't realize this until you get there, but you don't care at this point. But I mean,
he's a short motherfucker.
He's a short motherfucker, but charisma. I mean, the whole thing, the whole nine yards, we took the train in. At that point, a few years later, my mom's like, yep, you're old enough to get on the train by yourself with your buddies. But I can say the same thing. It really had a massive impact. The words, you know, what they were talking about were real events. They were very powerful.
Yeah.
And it moved people, and it still does. And you don't have to like everything they've done. They've taken some creative license on things. And I saw them a few years back, a couple, not the most recent, but the one before, over at The Link. And that was a different experience for me because I looked at it as it's not as intimate.
Right.
I mean, it was awesome.
Right.
But it was, you had to watch the Jumbotron for the most part.
Right. And I was at that show.
You know, it was an awesome show. But again, I would love to go back. Probably not going to happen. Maybe when they retire and decide this is our last tour and we're going to go and do some small venues. You know, like Springsteen's doing on Broadway right now.
Yeah, not likely.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to go and go.
I mean, like I told you, the first show I saw them in was the biggest stadium, like, in the world. You know,
right, that was.
That was a big stadium.
That was. Right?
Huge.
JFK, right?
Yeah.
That was 100,000 people that holds, I think, could hold, because they did Live Aid at JFK
as well. And they had the ground, the floor. I mean, that's a huge.
It's massive.
Huge stadium.
And people not from, I mean, you don't remember, me too. Some, listen to this, hopefully you're old enough to realize, you could look back at pictures. Now, I remember coming to Philly out of college and seeing that for the first time. I'm like, oh, man.
It was a beast.
The Vet, but man, this thing's just wide open.
Yeah.
It's traditional for our stadiums go.
Yeah.
So U2 is the other band. So Beatles.
Beach Boys.
Beach Boys, U2.
U2. I mean, those were,
for the most part.
Yeah.
No, there's no absolutes. I mean, there's a million bands.
REM was a huge,
and REM.
Little later on in my, you know, teenage life. You know, as I got older, I got into a lot of other bands, you know, of course. But, you know, I just, for me, that those were the three that got me going,
okay,
if you will, you know, the spark.
So here's the thing that bums me out. I was a big REM guy as well. I saw them in many different places, college town, saw them in the Spectrum had the Spectrum Showcase, which was, they basically just cut the stadium in half with some, you know, they draped it all off.
Oh, cool.
And REM came out and did their thing. Something's tingling me. It was awesome. I mean, but what bums me out is I don't see why they're done. I know there's reasons. I know there's probably many reasons. I mean,
yeah,
maybe we're having, you know, it was time to go. But they're still young enough and talented enough, and maybe there's other reasons, but I don't know.
I mean, I don't know either.
I would think there would be something left in the tank.
I mean, their albums, you know, there weren't a lot of good albums later on.
Right. They started, you know, this, yeah.
Once Bill Berry left, the drummer left the band,
yep,
things were different. And, you know, they always had, it was funny because I saw them a few times after that in concert, and they always had, like, backing musicians and a different drummer, obviously. But Bill Berry had a very unique, I wouldn't call it Ringo-esque, but he had his own thing going on,
yeah,
you know, as a drummer. And when you have these session guys who are clearly better drummers, like,
yeah,
technically better drummers, it's not the same vibe. It's not the same feel. You know what I mean?
Well, like you said before about someone coming in doing a cover.
Yeah.
And play it beautifully and perfect, note for note.
Right.
Is not the same necessarily.
No, I'd rather see someone interpret it their own way and make it, you know, something new, mm-hmm, right? Instead of trying to rehash something that existed. But that's just me. Yeah, so who knows, man? Although it was funny, I was just talking to a friend of mine about, so Peter Buck, the guitar player from REM, has a festival in Mexico, right, on the Baja Peninsula, like, you know, above Cabo, right? I think it's called Todos Santos or something. Anyway,
I'm getting a strange feeling right now.
Right.
Where is this going?
Yeah. And I told my buddy, I'm like, we need to, this is the guy just moved to California. I'm like, we need to meet there, dude, and go to this festival. Cause it's literally like all these dudes who worshiped REM come and play in REM songs. It was like,
oh, really?
Death Cab for Cutie. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco was there. Two of the guys from REM. And they just hang out with like all these other musician friends of theirs and like play music in different small, medium, large venues.
In the Baja Peninsula.
Yeah.
This little Mexican town. Over 2 weeks?
I think so. I don't know if it's happening this year. They haven't announced it yet, but it happened last year.
You know, I'd rather go do something like that at this stage than a South by Southwest even.
And, yeah.
You know, because as you get older and mature and mellow a little bit, you just want to just relax. You know, just chill out, hang.
Plus, I'd like to run into Peter Buck at a bar and buy him a shot of tequila. Let's face it.
Cool.
That would be a good day.
You know, there's another guy, you know, again, with Bill Berry, unfortunately, I mean, for those who don't know, he had an aneurysm or something. He had a brain issue.
Yeah.
Or he almost died. Yeah. Like, drill your hole in your head, put you in a coma maybe, and remove the clot. And that kind of puts you on the sidelines. I think technically he could play, just couldn't tour. He'd probably go into a session, but he probably could never tour again because of the amount of physicalness of being a drummer.
Sure.
It's hard. It's a lot of freaking work.
You know, and he probably was also like, well, I'm already set for life financially. Why would I risk it? I'm going to go enjoy my life. And maybe he wasn't enjoying the music anymore. I mean, that's okay, you know? There's some cool videos out there on YouTube of, like, you know, you'll see he'll come on stage with, like, Mike Mills.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, and Peter Buck and whatever. Because Mike Mills and Peter Buck have been in a couple different things together.
They're doing some side projects.
There's, like, tons of side projects they're both involved in. which are cool, you know, and they'll always play like little clubs in Philly. And he's come out a few times at like the 40 Watt in Athens where they got their start and stuff, you know. So, hey, can we take five?
Actually, you know what?
What? Are we done?
We're going to wrap this.
All right.
The reason being is I had set a timer.
Okay.
Timer's off. Hour. Well, here's how it goes. I mean, I think a good solid hour is about it because what I really want to do is do a follow-up to this sometime in the next 6 months or so.
Sure.
So we leave some gas in the tank for that.
Good.
So everybody, listen, we're drinking a couple beers, and these are like 16-ounce beers, and eventually nature calls. So on that note, I'm going to say throw it back to Jeff and say what a pleasure this has been.
Thanks for having
thank
me.
You.
This is awesome.
Well, thank you. Actually, I feel like kind of weird because I'm signing off in your space with your equipment, and you're going to send me the recording to upload, but we're going to do this again and take sure. it from to the next.
Maybe we'll play a little music next time.
Yeah, I'll sit there and strum a few chords.
Good.
All right. Peace out.